halfway through the show. Richard Pollock filling in the toast chair for Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, and soon to be joined in studio again by Michael Remus, who's just got off the phone with Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey. He is going to join us in a couple of minutes. Just got to, on his way to the airport, trying to get into, obviously, Czech Republic to cover the Ivan Hlinka tournament. And before we get into this interview, I got to do the Drew Mindell. You want to do the impression, Ezzy?
What am I doing here?
Twitter and Facebook.
Oh, okay. So I'm doing this in Drew Mindell voice.
That's right.
All right, before we get to Tom Lynn, let's do. Let's just plug the Facebook here. Don't forget to follow Illegal Curve on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Hopefully some people enjoyed that out there.
Remus is giving you the clap from the other room.
I know Richie enjoyed that. Hopefully Drew's in Minneapolis, you know, having a little vacation. I don't know what he's on vacation for, because his life is a vacation.
Yeah, his life is a vacation.
Hopefully Drew got a little kick out of that.
And it was his birthday this week.
Yes, that's right.
75.
75 years old. Drew doesn't look a day over 73 either. So, yep, Drew turned 75. We celebrated his birthday at the old folks' home. No, you know, Drew's a good guy. And
he actually, Reichel's writing us from the other room that Drew shares the same birthday as Sidney Crosby and Angels superstar Mike Trout, which is funny because he's actually their ages combined times two.
Right, and he's not a superstar. but Drew, we always give Drew a hard time, but obviously we're looking forward to him coming back next week. No, Drew, we miss you. You know, it's always funny to do a little Drew impression he's gone.
That was good. You know, the Ivan Hlinka tournament is a significant tournament.
Yep.
In that it really, and we're going to ask Tom about this, but from what people say, and then the writers and scouts and such, it does give people a nice kind of a framework for the draft moving forward.
Yep.
Who is where and who's a big talent. Now, the big name, and we're going to ask Tom about him, In this year's tournament for Canada specifically, is Nathan MacKinnon. And Nathan MacKinnon, you know, the ties to Crosby growing up around the same area.
Yep.
People say this guy is the next big thing. It's Nathan McJones, the defenseman who we actually saw as he played. If people remember, the MTS Center played host to the Under 16 tournament, and Seth Jones was on the U.S. team. I believe we saw them play against Ontario, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Team Ontario.
And Seth Jones was far and away. You know, we hadn't heard about him. Seth Jones, by far and away, was the best player in the U.S. team then. Seth Jones is also known as, Popeye Jones, the former Toronto Raptor. That's Popeye Jones' son.
That's right.
And Seth Jones, a great skater, moves the puck well. So he's, the talk has been, it's those two guys as the guys coming up for that draft. And it's a big draft. It's going to be, obviously, it's still a little while away because those guys are young. But those guys are tremendous talents, and Nathan MacKinnon, I don't think Seth Jones is actually playing in this tournament, so I didn't see him on the U.S. roster, but Nathan McKinnon's going to be a significant player here, and people are going to be very interested to see how he performs.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're joined now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline by Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey on his way to the Czech Republic, going to be watching the Ivan Hlinka tournament. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Excited to get the kickoff to this year's draft class.
For the last 2 years, four years, Canada has won the gold medal. So I guess in terms of a team aspect, Tom, you know, who are the expected favorites of this year's tournament?
Well, you know, it's a very good question because the U.S. in the past years has sent its national team development program team. This year they decided not to do that, take a collection of all-stars from their national camp. So that being said, it's really hard to tell where these guys will add up compared to the guys' national team program. But in the Five Nations, the U-16 team did pretty well, so we'll see how it goes. Canada's the favorite, but the U.S. could be better or worse, depending on how this theory works.
Tom, this might be an obvious question, but is Nathan MacKinnon expected to be the most watched player at the Ivan Hlinka tournament this year?
Well, I would say yes in the aspect of he's the highest-level name, the most talented player. You know, that being said, once again, not everyone expects to pick in the top two or three.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the teams will be focused on players who they think they can actually get with their first-round pick, whether they be 10th or 15th or 30th, and how good the team is. So, yes, he'll be watched well, but there are those teams. You know, I don't think that the Detroits of the world feel like they're going to pick for the first time in 15 years in the top three.
How does a player's performance at this tournament affect his draft stock?
Kind of starts the year. I mean, I've seen players like Jimmy Hayes, who's now with Detroit in the past, be the best player in the tournament, look like a top five pick, and then by the end of his draft year end up not in the top 20. On the other hand, it sets the table for the year. This is the kickoff of this class. All the teams turn from last year's draft to this year's draft at this tournament, basically, on a national or international level, and it starts off the year. So it's important to start off well, but you know, if you don't do well here and have a great year, you can still make it up.
We're joined by Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Tom, is this tournament gaining momentum every year and becoming more, you know, getting more and more attention?
It is, and it's funny because I go to it very often, and you wouldn't know from being there. It's fairly rural places, Bratislava, Czech, and Piešťany, Slovakia, right by Trenčín, where all the players come out of it. So you'll go into your hotel, and you ask where the arena is, and they don't know. So you find your way there, and you sit in the stands among NHL scouts and everyone else. No one locally is really paying attention. But, you know, on the internet and on the international hockey scale, it's huge. Locally, not so much.
You know, when you're talking about evaluating a player, and a lot of scouts are going to be there, Tom, how does it, you know, how do you kind of weigh the fact that the players are going overseas and playing on an Olympic-sized ice surface when maybe some of them have never done that before, or at least on a significant level? Do you have to kind of taper your expectations in terms of, you know, some players in that they're having a trouble adjusting, maybe also some of the players who kind of need to improve their skating?
Yes, I mean, very much. In my position, I'm evaluating guys, and so I also realize the national programs make a big difference. Team Canada is the gold standard. They've been going there for years. All their national tournaments, they prepare sleep times, eating times, make sure everyone does the right thing and prepares for games. Whereas with other countries, you might have, you know, these are teenagers. Mm-hmm. They land in a foreign country. They might not have eaten well. Some of the teams from other countries, you know, Finland and the rest, are gathered just a few days before they go. And so they haven't had long camps or as much time together as lines. So you've really got to take that into account and look at how a player plays, because you can really misgauge a player based on how well their national federation has prepared them for these tournaments.
Tom, who are some of the other players to watch in this tournament, maybe from Team USA, Russia, other countries? We obviously know about Nathan MacKinnon, Max Domi, some guys on the Canadian team. Who are some of the other players to watch in this tournament?
Well, you know, you mentioned that the Canadians have a very strong entry, and I think everyone knows that. So it's almost a given that the trick will be to dig in. I myself have a few guys in the U.S. team, and I've been watching them closely because the 96-95 class, you know, wasn't as strong, and the 96 are stronger. So the 95s, everyone's focused on, you know, what you can get out of here. And the defense is very strong for the U.S. You have Tommy Vanelli and Teemu Kivihame from the U.S. Kivihame played with the Finnish Federation as U-15 and U-16 because he's a dual citizen from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And now those guys are hitting the national stage. It's an interesting thing in the U.S. that a lot of players can hide more in the high schools and you can basically evolve in their draft years and jump out and say, you know, here I am in Canada. That's tougher because most of the top players are drafted by, you know, major junior programs and get to that program. So to watch, especially the Finns in the U.S. at this tournament, can make a big difference in the team's drafting. And those two players have stepped up from basically high school stars to international stars in the last 3 months.
You know, Tom, you're going there on behalf of Veritas Hockey. Who are some of the Veritas Hockey players competing in this tournament? And can you give us some background on those players?
Well, I've had a very strong development program in the past year, trying to take my NHL experience into creating camps and development opportunities. And we sent five guys from this draft class from our camp and our development program to the national camp in the U.S. and four of them made the Ivan Hlinka team, Kivihame and Vanelli, whom I mentioned, and Vinny Leteri, who's cousin to the Nannies, a famous Nanny family from the Sioux. So they're well known. You've got Parker Reno, who's just come out of nowhere in Minnesota. He missed an entire year with an injury for the most part, just kind of jumped out and made his way. And then there's Carson Coleman with two K's. He's your classic Minnesota story. I love these things. He lives in a small town with about 500 people. He played for a high school team there. No one really knew about him. He hit the national camp, and I remember Craig Button coming over to me from TSN and saying, who is this guy, Tom? Who is he? So it's fun to see those guys who come out of our camp and our development program hit the international stage and hit it hard.
It's all about those stories. Tom, you mentioned your NHL experience. I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the progress or maybe lack thereof of the CBA negotiations. If you know, you've been inside those negotiations before. Is there any reason for fans to worry at all before that September 15th deadline, or are we just dealing with a lot of posturing right now?
Well, you know, I always caution that we don't know from the outside. Even when I was an insider of sorts, leading the Wilds program, there are only a few people on the NHL side who really know what's going on. you know, the Jeremy Jacobs, Gary Bettman, and Bill Daly crew. They report back, you know, kind of in layers, like an onion of who knows what. From the outside, you know, you can't say you have inside information, but based on my long experience going back to working for a law firm that represented the league in collective bargaining, there's a different dynamic here that hasn't really played itself out. But in past negotiations, when the league would come in to ask for some kind of capitulation, it was a give and take. So you remember back in 2004-05 when the league did so well, they said, look, we want to have a salary cap and all these things, but we'll give you more free agency, more rights in contracts and everything else. It was a give and take. In the current one, you see the league come in basically 10 demands and no give. Here's the 10 things we want. They haven't offered any kind of carrot. So whether they're just waiting for a response and we'll do that, or whether that's the hard line, will be the real indicator, because there's no give and take right now. There's just take.
I guess it'll be interesting to watch it all play out. And, you know, Tom, we appreciate your time. Enjoy the Ivan Hlinka tournament. It's good to hear about the players that you have competing, and I hope you enjoy yourself.
Thank you. Take care.
That's Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. The Ivan Hlinka tournament is going to be, it's going to move to the forefront of people's interests here. And, yep. You know, you're going to see a lot of it on TSN. There's going to be a lot of play about it. And there should be, because you're talking about the next young stars, and it gets us a nice look. And, you know, as a team, and as fans in Winnipeg will know, the Jets talk about building through the draft, so you want to become familiar with the draft picks prior to the tournament taking place.
Yeah, and with the possibility of a lockout, I mean, you've got the Canada-Russia challenge happening right now, coming back to Halifax. You've got the Ivan Hlinka tournament here, so you've got some hockey in August. You might want to take advantage of it and watch some of it.
There's never a bad time for hockey. We only have 3 segments to go on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back after these words. After the hour, Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for the Honorable Drew Mandel.
Little Drew Fighters.
The Right Honorable Drew Mandel.
The Right Honorable Drew Mandel.
He has that title?
Not really.
Not really.
Joining the studio by Ezra Ginsberg, that was Michael Remus. You just heard Tim Debenham playing some good tunes today, Timmy. I gotta say,
Oh boy, Richie.
This segment's brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. The Cheer Bar and Grill is your destination for the best in sports action. Everywhere you look, big screen HD TVs mean that you won't miss a minute of the game. Pool tables, foosball, bubble hockey, and golden tea make for a great night out at the Cheer Bar and Grill. The best patio in Osborne Village means inside or outside, great times are to be had at the Cheer Bar and Grill in the heart of Osborne Village.
Now, people don't know this, but Remus is a world champion bobble hockey player.
Bobble hockey. I got some friends who are better.
What's bobble hockey?
I don't know.
I think that's with bobbleheads. No, I don't know. But you know, guys, we got, you know, speaking of HGTVs, you know, they got a lot of those at the Cheer. We got some of these in studio, and I'm watching this wrestling, Olympic wrestling. Nothing like WWE. I have no idea what's going on the TV right now.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, it should be like the Big Show versus John Cena at the Olympics, you know, or well, you know, so- Y2J versus Alberto Del Rio, something like that. This Greco-Roman, yeah, I agree, Reem. It's not doing it for me either.
Someone tweeted, actually, the other day about the Olympics of professional wrestling, that parts unknown would maybe have a good team. But I think Canada would have a pretty good team in the Olympics.
Well, based on these Olympics, absolutely. I mean, maybe the results are fixed.
Rapid fire.
You heard the rapid fire music. The first question, guys, I have for you is, are you surprised that 2,500 people dropped off the wait list of the Winnipeg Jets?
I'm a little bit surprised, but I don't know if the lockout has something to do with it, or maybe people are deciding, you know, that they don't think that they're ever going to get high enough on that waiting list to get season tickets. I don't know. I know that when the Jets announced that they were opening up waiting list spots and then later announced that there were 2,500, people were a little bit surprised. I thought it might have been closer to 1,000. But, I mean, that's how many spots there are. But the fact that there's still people, and I believe it was yesterday that people could sign up for the waiting list, and I've heard that there are people signing up for the waiting list, so there's still people on there. I don't know if all 2,500 spots have been taken. I guess it's a little bit surprising, but hey, the fact is there's still people that want to get a season ticket, and you know, if you want to do that, you have to go on the waiting list. So a little bit surprised, but not really.
I think what I think about the waiting list is last year, you know, there was the drive to 13, and there was a big scramble to get tickets, yep. And people weren't you know, we never had a team, so you weren't sure how you were going to go to games.
Right.
So they opened up the waiting list pretty much the same day where people were ready to plunk down, you know, thousands of dollar commitment to buy season tickets.
Yep.
So they kind of just opened that up, and people just, you know, it was like, oh, well, we can't do this. We might as well do this. But now you see that there really wasn't a realistic chance,
right.
And people did get to go to more games than maybe they thought they would have, because, you know, if you want to go to a game, you're going to know someone who knows someone. You can get tickets. So, I mean, I think that those waitlist spots will get picked up easily,
yeah.
But...
I mean, everybody's got friends. You go on Facebook and they'll see posts of people wanting tickets if they can buy tickets from a friend or such. So, I mean, you know, you're buying it at face value and you're just going to go to the game and enjoy.
I think it's funny that we're just, like, are we talking about a waiting list? It's so funny that...
Of course.
It's unreal. I mean, you know, if you want to go on the waiting list, True North will let you go
on
the waiting
list. If the waiting list was free, people would stay on there. I mean, obviously, it's just a matter of the money as well. $100 a year, right?
Right.
So,
yeah, you get 15% discount at the Jet Store.
You do.
They give you some. You get
And you
some
get first
access.
Dibs on those tickets. And
hey, those mini hockey sticks are expensive.
Well, if you have some money to burn, maybe you can help the Devils or the perspective, you know, the perspective of Phoenix owner Greg Jamieson. So,
yeah.
I mean, Remus wants to talk about this later, but we're going to talk about it now. Which of these teams has less money? I mean, how do you have owners who don't have money to own the team?
What's 0% of negative zero?
Seriously.
I don't know. I mean, you know... You know, dating back to when we were on Red River Radio, we covered the Phoenix Coyotes ownership issue. And then obviously the entire city of Winnipeg went through the Phoenix Coyotes ownership issue last spring. I don't know who's following this anymore. I mean, is Greg Jamieson going to buy the team? You know, is the Goldwater Institute involved? I don't know. You know, city council, there's Glendale City Council involved and there's votes and everything. It still seems like it goes back to the same old question. Is the owner putting up enough of his own money, and it seems like Greg Jamieson isn't, and he still wants concessions with, you know, owning the arena and all of these, you know, concessions. So it's a good question. We know that, you know, in New Jersey, they want a majority owner. They want an investor.
Right.
So, you know, both teams definitely need lots of private help. So I think that the New Jersey situation is... easily more rectifiable than the Phoenix situation. I don't think that the Coyotes are going to stay longer than a year. I just don't see it happening. I mean, it's been 3 years now of this nonsense. I don't see it happening. And in New Jersey, I think there's more of a chance that somebody steps in to help Jeff Vanderbeek.
I don't know too much about the New Jersey, but as far as the Phoenix situation goes, someone just put this thing to sleep already. I'm so
another
sick
terrible
every
Gary
day.
Bettman mismanagement.
Well, the thing about these teams is, you know, they talk about, you know, building, you know, the revenue pie, blah blah blah. The Phoenix team, they contribute nothing to the league. And they renew this agreement, you know, for another month. I don't know.
And they're fleecing the city. I mean, the city's agreeing, but they're fleecing the city.
Well, the city is so far in debt now. I mean,
as far as I'm concerned, they're taking intellectual advantage of the people who work for the city.
Just end this thing, fold the team, and have a dispersal draft. Like, come on.
And Reem, back to the Shane Doan thing. I mean, what does it tell you about what's going on in Phoenix when Shane Doan is visiting Vancouver, Philadelphia, L.A., you know, trying to see, you know...
He's still waiting. He hasn't signed with anybody.
What the future is. I mean, the chances of you know, an owner emerging, whether it's Greg Jamieson or someone else, is very, very slim. It doesn't look good, and it hasn't looked good for, what, 3 years now?
Well, if Shane Doan is waiting for the Phoenix situation to be resolved before he signs, I don't think he's going to be playing this year.
He'll be 42.
Yeah.
Brian Burke, who obviously gets talked about an awful lot lately, was testified recently against the Vancouver Canucks, which ended up resulting in Mark Messier being given the money that it was deferred to him, and I personally believe he was entitled to. There was much made about the fact that Burke testified against Canucks because he already has frosty relations with some in that organization. Do you make anything of that?
I totally forgot Mark Messier played for the Vancouver Canucks.
I think most Canucks fans did too, Andy.
No, I'm just kidding. But, I mean, obviously he signed that contract.
Wait, was it Messier or was it a guy in a Messier costume?
Yeah, right.
Well, if you guys remember correctly, what actually happened that offseason was Messier got into a... That could be nostalgic for a second. Messier got into a contract negotiation issue with Neil Smith of the New York Rangers.
Right.
The Rangers had just made it to the conference finals. They beat Florida in 5, Jersey in 5, and they lost to Philly in 5. Although those games were pretty close. And, you know, Rod Brindamore had a big
1997?
Goal. 1997? 1997,
yeah. Yep.
And what happened was that team, so the Rangers go out and they bring in Mike Keane, Winnipegger Mike Keane, and they sign Brian Skrudlin.
Yep.
So Mike Keane was with Colorado, and Skrudlin was with Florida.
if you recall correctly.
After the rat year.
That's right. So they bring those guys in. They were going to play the third line with Billy Berg. And they had Gretzky at number one. They had Sundstrom. They had Kovalev. They had a bunch of other guys. And Messier was, you know, they assumed Messier was going to re-sign. They were going to take that core with a good checking line, a better checking line than they had in the playoffs in 97 with Richter, Leach, Bokuba, and go forward.
And Messier wasn't going to get as much money in New York as he got in Vancouver.
Well, they weren't sure. Not that New York ever lacked from, you know, there was no salary cap then. Neil Smith, for whatever reason, decided to hardball Messier.
Why hardball Messier?
Exactly. And nobody ever understood that. And Messier ended up leaving for Vancouver. It never worked out in Vancouver. The Rangers replaced him with Patty LaFontaine. He ran into Mike Keane in the neutral zone accidentally, you know, 20 games into the season approximately. He got concussed. He already had concussion problems. And the Rangers were essentially a joke of a franchise. And you know, Gretzky had nobody to play with until he retired. And they haven't, you know, they didn't get back until 2000 and until the year after the lockout, really. So, I mean, there was a lot of things that happened because of that. But I personally, back to the point, I don't really blame Brian Burke.
No, I mean,
he's probably just saying exactly what the deal was.
I bet he enjoyed going against the Vancouver.
Probably did.
Wow, I'm reading this article, and it says that they thought that Messier would raise the value of the franchise, and if the value of the franchise raised, owe him money.
That's what happened. Then Burke was just confirming, Burke was just confirming that that's what the deal was in place.
But how ridiculous of a concept is that? Huh? That one, I mean, I guess it was Messier at the time, and they thought he'd be there, but that really did not work out for them at all.
Well, I want to talk about Brooklyn, because Brooklyn apparently is making a play for an NHL team. How many hipsters will it take to go to the games to make it cool?
Well, it depends. Is that when you're in Brooklyn or when you're not in Brooklyn? Because when we were in Brooklyn, you were in that Soho district.
Soho's
walking around.
Soho's in Manhattan. We were in Williamsburg.
You came from Soho to go to Williamsburg.
That's right.
And you were wearing the toque and the flannel shirt. You were a hipster. You were too New York for the hipsters in New York. obviously we're hearing that the owners of the Brooklyn Nets are interested in bringing the Islanders to Brooklyn.
But then you read this week in Newsday that the Islanders have two prospective builders who are looking at building either redoing Nassau Coliseum,
the Lighthouse Project,
or building a new one and trying to keep it in Long Island. So I mean, I don't know how much of this is actually going to happen, but at the end of the day, I mean, there's more hipsters in Brooklyn than not Long Island, so.
Look, though, with the
Michael, you would know. You've been partying on Osborne lately.
The Russian guy, he's got a lot of money, and he wants to get a team in there. I mean, they're having a KHL game in that arena, I believe, an exhibition in September. Are they not?
Yeah, they are.
So, move Phoenix to Brooklyn? I mean, I'd like to see the Islanders stay on the island.
Does that mean that Spike Lee would go to Brooklyn Islanders games?
Apparently he's not leaving his allegiance with the New York Knicks, but I mean, he'd probably be willing to leave any kind of Rangers allegiance to go to the Brooklyn. Well, they wouldn't be the Brooklyn Islanders anymore because Brooklyn isn't. Is Brooklyn? Brooklyn isn't an island.
No, isn't. Maybe they'd be the Brooklyn Boroughs. That's not
boroughs.
A borough. Is it a borough?
It's a borough.
Yeah, it's a
borough. Borough of New York.
It's a borough.
Yeah. So aside from the Devils and the Coyotes, it's clear the Islanders lease comes up in 2015.
By the way, more importantly, I want to cut in. More importantly, if you're an Islanders fan, can somebody put together a song with the Bad Boys theme to Brad Boy's name for the Islanders? We're talking about this at hockey last night in the dressing room. Why hasn't somebody done a parody on that?
Brad Boys, you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you, Brad Boys?
We wanted to make a parody of. You guys have a parody ready? Is that what?
No, I wish we did.
I want to make a parody of. I guess we can't do anymore. But GST to TNT. You know the GST line.
What happened? Yeah, that'd be good. But what about Glasses Gone?
Well, like I said, you can't do anymore. But
I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk about that. That's a sore spot for me and Jay Richardson. And Dave Minuk.
Speaking of
Dave Minuk, was the one who got the GST line out there. Shout out to Dave Minuk. Without Dave Minuk, I wouldn't be the man that I am today.
I'm not sure that's a good thing, but you mentioned Dave Minuk. The IllegalCurve.com morning papers are up and ready. Dave's got them up there. Take a look at the Jets stories of this morning, and you spoke about the GST line. Well, apparently the Jets have a bunch of third-line prospects. We're going to talk about those prospects with Corey Priman of Hockey Perspectives after these words.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? Oh, what you gonna do when they come for you? The
chuck it on that one, you chuck it on this one, you chuck it on your mother and you chuck it on your father, you chuck it on your brother and you chuck it on your sister, you chuck it on that one and you chuck it on me.
Bad boys, what you gonna do?
What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do?
See, if we had Drew here, Richard Pollock, by the way, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel. If we had Drew here, he wouldn't allow for this, would he? I'm joined in the studio, of course, by Ezra Ginsburg.
Well, Drew doesn't like fun. I mean,
of course, anti-fun.
He hits 75 years old, and you know, fun time is over.
Michael Remus, and of course, producer Tim Debenham.
Let's hit it
now. Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline by Corey Prodman of Hockey Prospectus and ESPN. Corey recently unleashed his top 10 Winnipeg Jets prospects, and he talks about a couple other players at the end of that article. You can read that article at hockeyprospectus.com. Corey, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us, Corey. I mean, you know, we talk about Jets prospects, and I guess it starts with Mark Scheifele, a player that I think has kind of risen a little bit in your book since his draft year. Can you talk about where he stands as an NHL prospect now, and maybe you had tweeted about it, I think it was yesterday, how you think that his, you know, skating, which needed to improve, has taken a little bit of a next step.
Sure thing. I mean, everybody remembers about this time last year after the draft, there definitely was some question marks on, you know, Scheifele going at that eighth overall selection, be it from mainstream critics or even NHL executives I talked to. But I mean, if I talk to the same executives now, they would kind of say, you know what, I might disagree with Scheifele over Couturier, but I get what the Jets saw in him. I mean, he's a guy with a high-end hockey sense. He has a good skill level. He has a frame that can play well at the NHL level once he fills out. And there's definitely the component there that you can see how he could develop into a top player down the line. And the main knock on him, as you said, was his skating for most of his draft year and for most of his first post-draft year. But when I saw him in the AHL at the end of the season, I definitely thought that component of his game has showed significant improvement from, say, 6 months ago when he was playing at the Canada-Russia Challenge. I mean, during that first game, because the second one he got knocked out early with a game misconduct. I saw some of those same improvements translate from the past spring, and it definitely seems like it's that one area of his game, the improvement is real and something that he can continue working at. It seems like he's kind of nullified his one major hole in his game, and that could be good news for him really establishing himself as a true top-of-the-line prospect.
Corey, you've got Jacob Trouba ranked number 2, and he's obviously new to your list from last year. Of course, he was only drafted 6 weeks ago. What do you think Jacob Trouba's upside is?
I think he's a guy who's probably I think he has some offensive talent. I think he has a couple of above-average offensive qualities, but the primary bulk of his value is going to come from his offensive game. A high-end skater and physical player, makes good reads on his own end, can shut down players who are faster than him and really can lay the body with frequency. I think he's a guy who can be a very tough minutes defenseman, you know, an okay number 2, very good number 3, who logs some of your really heavy defensive minutes and is like a good second power play kind of player.
Looking at this list, you have Ivan Telegin at number 3. Do you see him as a winger or a center?
It's hard to say. I know he's listed as a center in some places, but I mean, I've seen him play a wing, and it really depends on where Winnipeg wants to use him. Usually, when a guy is multidimensional like that, people will at least try him at center. But I would at least be leaning to say that I think he's a winger down the line. But he's a guy I'm pretty high on. His stock's kind of been up and down since he was drafted in 2010. But I mean, you know, he's a big guy with speed, hands, can make plays to his teammates. Has a power game element to him, and towards like the last quarter, if not last third of this OHL season, from scouts I was talking to in that league, he was probably one of the best players during that time frame. And he looked like he's really kind of developed really well and risen into his own.
We're joined by Corey Prodman of Hockey Prospectus. Corey, a player that we got to see a little bit here in the exhibition season and called up throughout, you know, a little bit throughout the year, was Paul Postma, former Calgary Hitmen defenseman. We spoke to Keith McCambridge's coach late in the hockey season. He said that Postma's defensive game has really taken a step forward, and there wasn't too many questions about his offensive capabilities. Where do you see him in terms of upside and potential?
I think he's a guy who, at least potential-wise, I think he can be a top 4 defenseman and a top power play guy for the Jets. I mean, the offensive ability, as you said, it's very clear. skates extremely well for a 6'3 player. Probably has one of, if not the best shot in that organization. Can move the puck, has skill, and like I said, his defensive game has historically been his problem. I'm still not convinced he's going to be a top-end defender or a guy you want to put out there against the best opponents in the NHL, but I think it's improved to a point where I think he can play top 4 minutes in the NHL down the line. And I mean, with his size and his skill, he's a guy who definitely has notable value for the Jets organization.
Corey, Patrice Cormier, we're just going right down the list here to number five, and Patrice Cormier is a guy, obviously, drafted by the New Jersey Devils. I've been following him since he was in the queue, and you know, I've always had high hopes for him, as the Jets do. Can he put up enough points to kind of fill in a third-line role? Because we know that, you know, he's not expected to come in and you know, be a first- or second-line center, but do you think he's going to be able to develop into a third-line center?
Yes, and I think if your offensive expectations for Cormier are one of a third-line player, then I think, you know, you'll be pleased, because that's, I think he has some skill. I think, you know, he definitely has decent hands. He's not like a null offensive player, and he could make some plays. I don't think he has the top six level of offensive talent, but I mean, he has really good defensive value, good physical game, and a little bit of skill. So if you want him to be a checking third line center who can, you know, help a little bit on offense every now and then, that's the kind of player I think Cormier can be.
We're continuing down the list. We actually tweeted it on our Twitter account at Illegal Curve. Carl Klingberg, is he just a limited up and down winger?
I think in when he was a junior and when he was playing either in an under 20 tournament or other international play, he would show flashes of offensive talent. I mean, there would be some times where he would just blow by a defenseman and make a good rush on the net, or show the fact that he has a really good finishing ability from mid-distance. But in terms of, I mean, his puck skills or hockey sense, in terms of his offensive instincts, that's the kind of area where I question. I'm not sure if he really has that element to his game. Right now, I see him as a third-line forward. And, I mean, he really hasn't shown much in his first pro season to make me think otherwise. But, I mean, I say that with a bit of skepticism, because I have seen him show some scoring upside in past years.
Joined by Corey Proman of Hockey Perspectives. Corey, Zach Redmond's the player we've heard a little bit more about this year. You describe him as being a very intelligent player. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure thing. I mean, his hockey sense and his skating, I think, are his two best elements to his game. A very smart player in both ends. Makes a good first pass, closes his gaps well, tends to make good decisions under pressure. Despite the fact he has limited offensive skill, he was still used on a power play in St. John's because he's a smart puck mover who tends to make good, quick decisions. I think those traits are the thing, are his calling card to the NHL. Like I said, he's not really a really skilled guy, so I think expecting him to be a good top four defenseman might be unrealistic. But he has, again, the size, the skating, the smarts. I think he definitely could be an NHLer, possibly even next year.
Corey, you've got Spencer Mihacek on your list, and you know, obviously Jets fans remember him because he actually scored a game-tying goal against Washington towards the end of the season last year. I believe he got into about 9 NHL games. It looks like they're going to slate him as kind of, you know, an extra forward, a 13th or 14th forward, if you will. But is he worth a higher slot this year based on the way he's played over the last couple seasons, obviously, you know, most recently in the AHL?
Yeah, because Mihacek's kind of been one of those AHL tweeners, so to speak, in that he's produced at a pretty desirable level for the last couple seasons. But the thing has been, like, does he have enough to be a bottom six forward and produce significant value in that role in the NHL? And I think he could be that kind of player, but I wouldn't, you know, move my roster around as of now to make room for him. I think he definitely has the hard-working elements you want in a bottom six guy. He has some defensive value, but I really don't think, you know, his skill set stands out in several areas to, you know, just a clamor for this guy to be on your roster. I think an extra four is fine. If some injuries happen, I think he can be fine in a good fourth, fringe third kind of role, and that's basically where I would use him this year.
Number nine on your list is Julian Melchiori. So is he a good skater for his size?
Oh, yeah, very good. I think he's 6'4 and moves at an above-average level for a 6'0 guy. And the thing about Melchiori, he always had that element to his game, the size, the skating, and it was about, can he do anything else? And this year in the OHL, he was showing more confidence in his puck moving. He was playing better in his own end, and he's going to go play in the AHL next year. And I think his development is trending pretty well. Every OHL guy I talked to definitely praised his play with Kitchener and Oshawa this year. And he's a guy I'm pretty optimistic. I think I probably say a safe projection of him that's going to be a good third-pairing guy. But if he surprised me in a couple of years and he was even better than that, I don't think it would be a huge shock.
Joined on the Legal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Corey Proman of Hockey Prospectus and ESPN. Corey, actually, the Jets have a couple of players, Blake Wheeler, Jason Gregoire, kind of used that exception to get away from the organization that drafted them, being Phoenix, and the Islanders is where we're going here with Jason Gregoire. What do you see as his potential being? You know, can he get anything up? Can he become anything above a third liner, or is that more of an appropriate projection?
Yeah, coming into the year, there were definitely some scouts I talked to who thought he could be more than that, but he had a bit of a rough first pro season. Mm-hmm. He had injury issues, never really got going scoring-wise, although when he was perfectly healthy towards the end of the season, you kind of saw flashes of the player he could be. But just based on how his first pro season went, I'm a little skeptical. But again, I like his skating. I like his offensive instincts, and his two-way instincts, actually. I like his shot. He's a good work ethic person. And he has a couple of traits where you say, you know, maybe he could be better than third-line guy. But as of now, for a guy who only had 14 points in his first pro season, he's 23, it's really hard for me to say, oh, no, this guy's a top 6-4 down the line.
Corey, I'm not sure if you caught the Canada-Russia game 2 yesterday, but Lucas Sutter got a really nice assist on Morgan Riley's goal. There, they obviously lost, but it was still a nice play. Do you think it's possible then that, you know, Lucas Sutter is going to be better than we think he is? Because obviously he was a second-round pick, but everyone's kind of, you know, has him penciled in as a decent offensive player, more of a two-way guy. But is it possible that he's going to be better and maybe better offensively specifically than we think he's going to be?
Well, I saw Lucas Sutter a couple of times during his draft season, and I really don't think he's a top offensive player. I think, you know, his skating, his puck skills definitely aren't at that above-average level you want. But he definitely has that one offensive element to his game that the scouts like, and that is he's a smart player. He can move the puck. He has shown the ability to be an above-average passer, as you saw in that game when he set the Morgan Riley goal. So I don't think he's going to be – I don't think he projects as a top-six kind of player down the line. But I think he isn't a null offensive player because of the fact he's a really smart player who can certainly move the puck around and make plays.
Corey, your final question here. You know, we've kind of talked about the top players in the system. Overall, this system, you know, I guess if you have to grade it on an A to F scale, where is it kind of a C-plus system right now? Does it get up to a B? Where are we at?
In terms of the prospect?
As compared to every other organization, yeah.
I think the system right now is slightly below average. There was like a year or two ago where when it was a Thrasher system, it looked really bad. But I think with acquiring Schaefly, with acquiring Trouba, the fact that, they did move Schaefly up into the NHL for a couple of games, but they aren't rushing the players at least as much as Atlanta did when they had the franchise. The fact that Postma and Telgin are progressing well. It isn't definitely an above-average system, but it's starting to come together. You're starting to see the development of young talent in probably a more gradual and probably better form. And I think maybe over the next year or two, depending on how quickly guys like Schaefly and Trouba move, you probably could see the system on this current trend potentially move to an average, if not an above-average system.
Corey Proman of Hockey Prospectus and ESPN, thanks for the great information this morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot, Corey.
Thanks, Corey. Great information. You know, that's a good background on every single top player in the Jets system. That's some great information. Quickly before we go to break, we got a tweet, Michael. Somebody's kind of going at you a bit. Our bro in White Ridge. He wants to know if the show can get up before Tuesday on iTunes. What do you got to say to that?
I thought you were going to respond after break.
Oh, we'll talk.
Hey, come on. Reem gets it up. Reem's a busy guy. He's got a social life. I mean, he'll get it up. Don't you worry.
They're usually up since Sunday night in the summer. I've been pretty busy.
I'm just happy that, first of all, the name Brolin Weirich is an amazing name, but also his pictures of Al Bundy. So
yeah.
Can you go wrong there?
For a guy who has Al Bundy as a Twitter picture,
I love it.
I can help him out.
Exactly. No, ma'am.
One more segment to go on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back right after this.
Love and marriage go together like a horse. us and carry it.
Whenever you go to Chicago,
I tell you, brother,
you can't have.
Yeah, in Grand Park, they have the fountain there. Not to be confused with Grand Park Fountain in Winnipeg.
Right.
Like the water fountain that you
I don't even know if Grand Park Mall has a fountain. It's a pretty.
It's getting redone, actually.
Yeah, they're redoing it.
Mediocre mall. I love it, but
they're
it's.
They're redoing it now.
Yeah.
They got a Target going in there.
Oh, yeah, Target.
Comfortella.
Okay, wait, do you think when Target comes here, everything is just going to be, you know, more expensive and not as good, like every U.S. thing that comes to Canada?
I don't know, but are we like a retail show now?
I don't know. I went to Five Guys. I mean, it was great, but it was $15 for a burger, fries, and a Coke. That's expensive.
It was a good burger, though. Good fries. You got to get the Cajun fries, though.
Ooh, the Cajun fries.
Oh, I never did that. The toppings.
And I like the peanuts when you walk in. There's peanuts. That's
the
great.
Peanuts and the potatoes. I like it. I will say that the toppings on their burger are better than any toppings.
Well, we'll use the peanuts because our friend David Carr of Monopoly Realty is, of course, allergic to peanuts.
Oh. So
we can segue that way because this segment is sponsored by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a home is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. This is not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. You know, do you guys get mad when somebody says 230 instead of 230?
Hold on, I'm trying to call him and it's not working because I didn't punch in the area code. But
did you know? Area code? Oh,
it's the worst.
Oh my god. What is that other area code?
I can't concentrate long enough to put 10 numbers in.
It's a lot of numbers.
Luckily, I've already been putting all people in my phone as, you know, 204 before.
That's fine. But it's not so much like, you know, like when I'm at work dialing the number. It's a real pain.
Well, I always thought you had to put 1204, but that's one is only for long
then
distance.
Then they bounce that back. Yeah.
I'm trying to dial, and there's just way too many calls getting bounced back to me, not working.
I think each person.
That's because people blocked your number.
Each person should just get one number, and you're only allowed to call.
One, two.
Yeah, you're only allowed to call 9 people. Each person gets 9 numbers.
That's how it used to be. I mean, at my college at the lake, we have one of those old phones.
Exactly.
Where you know.
You have a college at the lake?
Put your thing up to your ear, and you turn the crank to dial.
Remus, why don't we take a moment to talk about that? We were once at a party, Winnipeg Beach, a while back. Remus was talking to a woman, an attractive woman.
Yeah.
And one of his pickup lines was, well, hey, I have a cottage on the lake.
Stop. I can't believe you just said that on here. Can we talk about the hockey news now?
Or? Sure, why not? Do you have the hockey news at your cottage at the lake?
Stop.
Poor Reem. Okay, you know, obviously, it came out that the hockey news ranked the Winnipeg Jets 14th in the East. Now, first of all, rankings mean absolutely nothing, both for the regular season and the playoffs, because all the experts and, you know, or analysts, and, you know, I guess we'll put ourselves in there too.
Oh boy.
Everyone
standards really
said
low.
That the Vancouver Canucks were going to beat the LA Kings. Nobody predicted that the LA Kings were going to sweep the Vancouver Canucks. So
let me read the description as they say why, okay?
Sure.
The Islanders 15th overall, the Winnipeg Jets are 14th. The Jets were awful on the road last season, so a sudden improvement there would go a long way. Still, what this team has in talent on the blue line, it greatly lacks up front. Blake Wheeler and Evander Kane had career years in 2011-2012, but will they continue that ascension, stall, or fall back? Can Brian Little regain the 30-goal form from 2008-2009? The Jets' offense needs a stud to assume control and for the plethora of youth to continue to rise. But when you rely on things like this to happen for your team to be successful, you're walking a thin line. I mean, obviously, it's a simplistic version because it's one paragraph. But, you know, people will argue that, you know, the Habs shouldn't be ahead of them or the Leafs. I mean, you know, we've talked about it before. I think the Jets can finish really anywhere from, like, 12 to 6.
It's possible.
I don't take issue with this as predictions. It's not scientific. It's a guess, and they're entitled to do that. And obviously, there's a Jets bias here. The fans think they're always going to do better. But the truth is, you know, I think the Jets are anywhere from 6 to 12, and we'll see what happens with injuries and such.
It's funny, though. The Jets finished 10th in the East last year. It was a 10th or 11th. It was one of the two. 10th or 11th in the East last year. And
yeah,
the fact that the hockey news, I want to clarify this. I mean, I was a longtime subscriber of the hockey news, and it's a great publication.
Every team who's in the bottom five of each conference, the fans are going
to
be mad.
Right, and this has nothing to do with the hockey news as a publication or as a website or anything like that. No. We're just talking about the rankings themselves.
Of course.
And because it was big news. I know H&L talked about it a little bit. But the reality is the Jets have actually improved in my mind, and I actually think that the Jets are going to be very similar. I mean, when the Jets came back, I was optimistic and said they could make the playoffs. And, hey, they were in the playoff race up until 7 or 8 games left in the season. So,
everybody's in the playoff race.
Oh, hold on. But I'm just saying, not everybody.
Everybody.
Columbus Blue Jackets were. You can't say everybody.
It was in the East, it was like Islanders, Carolina.
Yeah, but you can't say
7 games in a row.
Yeah, but that's,
Tampa was in it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say everybody.
Well, look.
I would say most teams, but you can't say everybody. But the Jets were in it. But this year, it's funny to me that they've ranked them 14th when I think they've gotten better. But a lot of other teams in the Southeast Division have gotten
better. We've mentioned on the show that the worst teams got better and the better teams got worse. Classic Bettman strategy.
I'm looking at it. Yeah, it seems like a lot of teams did get better. I mean, Florida State kind of the same. You know, Carolina got infinite. They're a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say this to Jets season ticket holders who have your ticket drafts. Carolina, bump them up a few spots
absolutely
on your season ticket draft rankings. You know, last year they were a bit of they were good games because they're division rivals, but they were a bit of a dead team.
If your Chan stall is better this year, what does that mean? Like, do they know which stall it applies to?
I wasn't that in favor of that chant.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Can we do cheers and jeers just in Drew's voice, Ezzy?
Well, I'm going to cheer the Canada-Russia World Challenge. No, I'm going to do it in my regular voice.
What? No.
You have to do it in Drew's voice. We're all doing it in Drew's voice this segment.
Okay, so I'm going to cheer the Canada-Russia Challenge. It's it might be a junior tournament. It might be younger players, and it might not be that much. But I'm going to cheer the Canada-Russia Challenge, honestly, because
is this now?
This is Ezra.
I enjoy it, and it's going back to Halifax, obviously, and you know we're getting to watch. You know, some of the future stars of the NHL. So I love it. Obviously, the 72 Summit Series is the greatest series of all time. So that's my cheer.
You know, guys, I'm going to cheer the players because these owners, they can't control themselves. They can't protect themselves from spending their own money. But really, I'm cheering the players for saying that they will go out and play exhibition games if there is a lockout. I'm totally in favor of the players this time. They need to stand up and maybe just go and create your own Bettman-less 10-team league. That would be really high-quality hockey.
If people are listening to this right now, like if someone just tuned into the show towards the end, they must think that we all have like multiple personalities or something. They're like, what's going on right now? Like, are these guys talking about hockey? Like, how many guys are in that studio? What's going on right now?
I'm going to jeer the Phoenix Coyotes. I mean, it's enough already. How many more times can we talk about the Phoenix Coyotes? They have no money. It's obvious. They have no money.
You might as well ask Ezzy to buy the team.
Yeah. I have a couple bucks in my wallet. Why don't I buy the team?
Ah, Drew.
Oh, my God.
We miss Drew.
It's been a great show. And it's flown by. And we, you know, August 10th, and we didn't have a second. We could talk another 2 hours. It's been a great time. I've enjoyed hosting today. I'm not sure if Drew's coming back or if he's moving to Minneapolis. And you
who
know,
cares, really?
As an illegal
at
alien.
At the end of the deer, who cares?
For Michael Rima, well, first of all, for our guest, Tom Lynn Veritas Hockey, Corey Fromman of Hockey Prospectus, and Frank Provenzano of the Dallas Stars. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
Oh, boy, Richie.
And, of course, our website, IllegalCurve.com. The morning papers are up. Been already drafted by Dave Manuk. They look great, as always.
Shout out to Dave M.
Every morning. For producer Tim Debenham, Michael Remus, and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm Richard Pollock. We'll see you next week. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.